Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's not letting me log in. This is odd. You there?
Contra Radio Network presents Ladies of the Watch.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Good evening. Welcome to Ladies of the Watch. We got another start just like Marvel. We need to do the Can You Hear Me Now?
There you go.
Tonight's show, I'm here with Mike Ronan from Survival Wolves off of Facebook. And I guess Sean did that one.
Contra Radio Network presents Ladies of the Watch.
I'm going to be standing in my tower because the only chair I have in here is sweet.
I can't log in online. That's not funny.
All right, let's try it again. Welcome to another wild beginning to Ladies of the Watch. You'll hear Dawn yelping in the background because her headphones don't work. And you're here with me and Mike Ronan from Survival Wolves off of Facebook. And we had another big start to the show, so hang on.
Tonight, I think some people just log in what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think they log in just to see what the beginning is going to start like. Tonight we're talking about bug-out locations.
Ooh, good one.
I'd like to know a little bit about ideas. I don't want to know your specific bug-out location or all your deep, dark secrets, but I want to know about some of the rules, regulations, what you're looking at, because I am in a conundrum with somebody who wants me to be in one of their groups. And when we first spoke about it, I thought, oh, okay, you know, they're set up, they know what they're doing, and they'll have a lot of good things in place. Because up here, where I'm at, I don't have a lot of people, but we're pretty set with who's doing what and what's being contributed and such. And when I spoke more about this person to this person in another state about their bug-out location, they said, oh, well, everybody's just coming in and they all have something to contribute skill-wise, and if they don't, they'll learn. And I said, okay, but what are they bringing? What is your base requirement for joining the bug-out group? He says, none of them will have anything, and there's about 20 coming. And I'm thinking, that makes no sense to me, because that means that I have to prep for 20 people, and they're going to just come in and utilize all my stuff. And then, you know, over the course of whatever, if we survive, everybody will learn a skill or start providing. And to me, that makes no sense. So I thought I would bring that up tonight and kind of discuss that.
I've got a question for you, okay? One of the lessons, a lot of people know that when we talk conflicted or we talk on the radio or everything, I like to use popular TV shows that we actually think might have some semblance of logic to it. The Walking Dead, if anybody who's a hardcore fan remembers Carol, when they first started in this end of the world as we know it scenario, was a battered, abused mouse who could not stand up for her husband for anything, even when her husband had turned to her daughter to start abusing her. When Shane had killed, well, he didn't kill, he beat the crap out of the guy, and then, of course, the zombie killed the husband. But Carol went from that to being one of the key badasses on the show now, survivalist. I mean, she literally is just a killing machine. One of the jokes is, don't tell anybody, you know, never go to the field with Carol when it comes to flowers, because a little girl she has to kill turns up, you know,
right.
She's crazy. She takes her to the field and she says, look at the flowers, and then she shoots her in the back of the head. Very capable, very, very logical. I mean, literally went from mouse to lion. I think when it comes to these situations, you're going to be seeing people who recognize they have skills they have no clue about. And you're going to have people that thought they had skills, but they're going to find out and do not.
Right. And on that level, on the skill level, I understand that. But when they come, are they just coming empty-handed and the bug-out location is providing everything? So does everybody work towards building a bug-out location, but then you have to have an initial spot? So does everybody – let's start with just the location. Does everybody pitch in and buy it? Does one person have it? If one person owns it and says, okay, this is going to be the bug-out location, does everybody contribute? Or what if you don't have money to bring supplies? Are your skills enough?
That's the whole thing. The person who owns it, is he going to turn into, you know, a tyrannical dictator because it's his land or her land?
Right. So the question that started this is in my conflicted what would you do scenarios on Facebook. It says, you want to group up with people and have a few in mind. How do you determine who contributes what to your group? Does everyone bring their own stuff and it's theirs, or do you all bring stuff and share? How is that determined? Does the doctor provide all the medical? Does the people who are in charge of protection provide all the bullets? How would this figure into your accepting people into your group? And then over the course of tonight, I'll be reading some of the answers because it was a pretty hot topic.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one
that
we said
pre-post? Hang on a sec, Don. I'm sorry, what, Mike?
I said, yeah, it was a pretty hot topic. I read some of them, and I refrained from really answering it.
Well, no, I want an answer, because actually some of those people are in the group I'm referring to. And to me, that it was a shock to me, because I know one person that will be part of the protection group, okay? But if you have, say, 20 people, let's say four families, so five families total, 20 people, okay? If the only person that has weapons is one person, and all the bullets, how are you passing out all the guns? Does everybody get the guns and bullets? That's an expensive prep, you know? And if people don't know how to shoot, they're practicing with your bullets, so you're wasting a lot of potential use there. That makes no sense to me. I mean, my thought on a bug-out group would be if it's a... say it's one person spot. I would think you guys would meet together and say, okay, you're going to be the medical person, you're going to be the protective person, you're going to be the electronics person or the handyman fix it all guy. You're going to be the one who grows the food, and you're going to be the one that helps grow the food and cook, can, and have the animals. So, in your respective portion of this group, you're going to prep for your thing. Example, if I'm medical, I would be taking charge of all the medical supplies that I'm going to want and need. I would make sure everybody was aware of their health needs and had, you know, what they could put away for their own medical use. Like, if you're diabetic and you need your insulin, if you have high blood pressure and you need your pills, you know, if you have heart medicine, you need your Digitalis, whatever you've got. You know, you would have your own setup with that, but I would also take a list of what you had or what you needed and see if I could get my own backup of it in case yours ran out, you lost it, we had to go scrounge for it, whatever. That way, I'm not having to do all the food, all the weapons, all the medical, all the seeds, you know, because that's an expensive thing for one person to get it all.
Well, in the stages of a prep situation, I understand what you're trying to say. You know, if you're going to be medical, yeah, you go ahead and just concentrate on medical. If I'm going to be the harvester, then, yeah, I'm going to concentrate on seeds and you know, seedlings and, you know, things that we're going to need, what's going to be hardy, what's going to work. I understand that in a prep to occur scenario. But I think once it occurs, the rules are going to change and it's going to go out the window because, you know, yeah, maybe, okay, in all reality, in our situation, I'm probably going to be the one looking at security when it comes to prepping for security. I kind of sort of figure people look at me, that's what they're thinking about, considering they think I'm crazy anyways. So I've got the guns, I've got the ammo, I've got the targets, I've got the training, but once that actually happens and we group up, I'm not working 48-hour shifts to go ahead and keep track, you know, or do watch, because it's just not feasible. I'm going to have to be
go ahead and help. Right, but you would be in charge of organizing the people in that area. So, for example, if you're protection, you have guns and ammo, but you have people that are going to be in that area too. You're going to have patrols. You're going to have whatever your plan is. And
sure.
You're in charge of making that roster, making sure that it's followed in that. But, I mean, even before you get to the bug-out situation, people still need their own basic food. I mean, I would say, okay, say Korea drops a nuclear bomb and EMPs half of the West Coast. Okay, everybody says, oh, my gosh, we have to bug out. There's rioting and such. Okay, well.
If that were to happen, Julie, that would take out the entire grid. Trust me, one
absolutely,
part
but
goes,
I'm saying, but
the
then people
goes.
Have to mobilize. So they're going to go, they have no preps, and they're going to go over to John's house to bug out because they talked about
house,
it.
Not my house, they won't.
Well,
I promise
no.
You that.
That's why I say John. So then they've got nothing. How are they going to make it across the area to get there? You know, what if it takes them a week? What if it takes them 4 days? They have no food, no water.
That's why I changed my bug-out bags to inch bags. If something so bad were to happen to force us to bug out, a 72-hour bag is not going to cut it. You know, you need more than that. And
ours are a month. My son and I can live out of ours for about a month. Probably longer, but it would be getting real lean. Go ahead.
That's
well,
what
the
I'm working
reason
on.
I think where you're going to need less is because, you know, we're all talking about bug-out bags you're carrying, talk about crossing, you know, the states on foot, or, you know, you may have to go ahead and do it on foot to get your designated location. I think in that situation, the less that you're carrying and the more you can gather hunter scenario situation in small portions. You know, I'd be hunting rabbits along the way, squirrel along the way, eating each meal as I go. But I would know, I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense. If I'm having to travel on foot from, say, Washington to Illinois, I don't want a 72-hour bag that's going to hold me down that I'm going to find out 3/4 of it. I'm not really going to be able to eat it. I'm going to consume right away, or I'm not going to be able to eat it. So a simple fishing line, snares, of course, your weapons and ammo. But even then, it'd be a rifle and a handgun because I don't want it, you know, you don't need an armory. Each individual should have a rifle and a handgun.
But that's my point. I mean, when you're planning on going into a group, you should at least have enough to manage your family for, I would say, at least a week, if not 2 weeks. Because, number one, you're in stress mode, you're leaving, you're going to this place. You get there, it's unorganized because not everybody comes in at the same time. Everybody's milling around and nobody knows what they're doing. And you're automatically jumping into taking supplies away from the host group, you should at least have enough to get yourself situated for a week or two until everybody's there and a group plan is made.
You in charge of the group, or is this a...
No, I'm not in charge of the group. This is a group that I've been invited to.
Okay. In that case, it should fall on the leader of the group to be able to handle that situation. He should be one of the first people on site. If he's not, then they should have a backup.
And right. Well, they have...
Remember, one is none. Two is one. Three is two.
Three
remember
is
that.
Two. No, I understand the rule.
I got a more important question, Mike.
Yes,
does the group that invited her realize that if something happens and she's still in Washington State, I've got first dibs, and I will react with violence if somebody tries to take her?
Right.
Okay.
It just
so how would you handle that situation?
To have a plan where
how
everybody in your group. Huh?
I would have to
I can
evaluate
barely hear you, kiddo.
I want them with mine. I mean, seriously,
how would you handle that situation?
I have potentials. And the reason we did this is because we don't know what's going to happen. I can't say that we can go from point A to point B every single time. So what I've done is I have made nodes where I've made communication lines with multiple entities and we've kept them fluid so that whoever ends up with in an area, we at least have, you know, medical, we at least have military, we at least have, you know, that type of thing. But it may not be
right. The
exact person you thought. However,
right. When
it comes to Julie and her situation and my kids and my situation, there's no negotiation.
Uh-huh.
Right. No, I told her I would
now,
take her kids.
I'm going to throw this into the mix. The wife and I do not drive, so anywhere we go, we have to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I can get a vehicle that I can hotwire and run. Okay? And
right.
Everything we're carrying is going to be on our backs.
Well, you're not going to be wanting to drive in a situation like this anyways, because the first thing that's going to happen is every road out there is going to be clogged. By every yokel
yep.
idiot who's communicating.
Believe me. I know back roads.
Okay. Right. And, okay. You know, there might be things that you... I mean, if you can find even a pony or a horse or anything, doesn't matter
that
if you're
too.
Walking
no.
or whatever, you
right.
could throw your gear over the back of the... Tie two bug-out bags together and drape it over the
right.
withers, and you can... Then it takes the weight off of you, and you can walk better. I mean,
and
in an emergency.
I have experience riding horses, so.
Oh, good you know, for you. Good,
that's
good,
not a problem.
But it makes
donkeys
more sense.
Mules, I don't like. They're mean. But horses, yeah, we have. Both of us have experience in riding.
Well,
if
even,
know
if
how
you,
to
even if
take
you don't
care
have.
Them.
Yeah, even if you don't have horses in your situation, I mean, at that time, I'm sorry, legalities are out the window.
If I get my hands on a
Winnebago, or if I get my hands on a, you know, a large enough SUV that will be confident and comfortable, I'm going scrounging. That doesn't mean I'm stealing from people who are actually bugging out or, you know, prepping or whatever. But if the car's there and no one's in it, you know, it's going to be by the grace of God go there.
Yeah, same here. And the wife knows that. I won't hesitate, you know. I see an opportunity, and that's it. Get in.
Right.
We're out of here.
Well, and back to the situation, I'm kind of the mind that each family should have at least one weapon between, say you have four people in your family. You should have at least one weapon, and the kids should know how to use rocks, sticks, slings, knives, whatever you're comfortable
and
with.
And guns.
You guys should each have a bug-out bag worth at least 1 week. And,
as minimum.
You know, it depends on your skills. The more skills you have, the more food you can put in your bug-out bag to get you go longer, or medicines, or whatever it is that you might be more important in your bug out bag. My bug out bag has a tarp, a knife, you know, like Don said, snares. It's got some fishing line. We made our own MREs, and they're all dehydrated down to nothing, so they don't take up a whole lot of room. The things that I need are so I can live off the land, mostly.
Right, and that's basically the way mine are, but we have enough dehydrated food at this point supply to both of us for, she's got a 6-day, and I got a 7-day.
Now, Mike got a question for you.
Water wise, we're good. I mean, I got enough water filters to survive for 2 years. Just
enough
water filters.
How close are you to the Catskills?
Excuse me?
How close are you to the Catskills?
I'm not. I'm in South Carolina.
Oh, I thought you were in New York. Sorry. Different Mike.
No.
Never mind. Okay.
If I was back up north, oh, I could survive. I'm from Vermont. I could survive.
Once
I get out there in them woods, I can hunt.
Yeah, but you're allergic to shellfish. I'm going to always remember that.
Shellfish, shellfish.
No,
seafood,
no iodine for Mike. But
my wife can eat it, and I have no problems with her eating it. It's just I can't be around it.
Right. So,
and I would make sure she was fed, but, you know, me?
Right.
I got enough fat on me, I can go, ooh.
From,
about a week without eating.
Same way. So, you know, and I brought this up in the group because I think that everybody who plans on going to a bug out location should have the basics for at least a week. That way, and a protection device, a handgun, a rifle, whatever you feel comfortable with, and enough bullets to get you into a thing. I personally think that it's crap that you would go to somebody's place and say, "Hi, I showed up. I can do all this stuff, but I didn't prep anything."
Right. I agree with that. Like, I know when I was in the military, standard combat load was 500 rounds. Now I hear it's, what, 250?
Yeah. But Mike, here's a question for you, you know, because you and I both did in the military.
Right.
I was with infantry, but I was a post, okay?
Uh-huh.
I was military pay. I still went and trained. I still went out to the field with them and everything. But let's be real, when it came to actual training, they allowed me, you can't see my little air quotes, they allowed me to play their training. But they really weren't as hard on me as they were their actual door kickers. I get that. My thing when it comes to a hit the fan scenario, you're going to have your pogues that you're going to need.
Yeah.
You probably did not prep because they're timid mice or they're liberals or they're, you know, they're whoever just didn't think it's going to happen. But they're going to have some mad skills you're going to need when it comes to admin. For instance, keeping track of everything. Keeping track of who needs what and where and where everybody is. A radar Riley.
That's where somebody would be step in and handle that. Do inventory, keep control, you know. Like an armorer, we could keep control of the weapons.
What I'm saying
would handle reloads and forging bullets, you know, stuff like that.
But what I'm saying is that in a shit hit the fan scenario, you're going to have those guys who show up and they literally, they have like dental floss on them. That's it. And they're like, okay, you're like, what skills you have? Well, I can't shoot, can't do this, can't do that. And then you find out they're brilliant with numbers or they're brilliant with paperwork. That just saves you a ton because all you got to do is put them in the corner and let them do the bookkeeping or let them do the inventory. Keep track of everything, and you can actually get back to doing what you really need. So, Julie, there are going to be those that do show up and say, I got nothing but my brain. But there's still going to be that.
I understand that, but I put in this group. I'm going to be the bad guy this show because I put in the group that I have a friend that has 8 kids. And those 8 kids, you know, they're rough and tumble, and they can play, and they know they're boys. So they're probably fishing and whatnot, but they're not real knowledgeable about outdoors. Okay, so She, her husband, and their eight boys come into my house. That's 10 mouths. Okay, if I prepped for my son and I, and it's not going to last. If I prepped for myself for a year, now all of a sudden it's reduced down by at least 25%. If not more. Well, yeah, but if you've got people fighting for resources, then you've got 10 more mouths to feed. You have to train them, and they're going to have to become skilled enough to go out and get said resources or figure out how important it is to not fall asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning while you're on sentry duty, or, you know, all the different things that it takes the rest of us time to learn. You can learn it, absolutely, but how long is it going to take you to learn it before
you know
you're skilled enough to become useful?
Yeah, you know what I just heard? You just have now 8 little boys, but instead of boys, insert here, you just have 8 little darling thieves. You have 8 little field workers. You now have 8 little, hey, guess what? We need you to go out and get cow dung. We need it. That's your simple task. And I guarantee you, you're going to have more than a house full by the time they're done.
Sure. I mean, well, I understand that everybody has a purpose and such, but the immediate short-term thing could be detrimental. I mean, there's...
It could be detrimental. I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. You know what you need, but now all of a sudden you've got yourself a huge burden. It's kind of like having, the refugees coming into America. We can't even take care of our homeless, and yet we're letting in thousands of these people who don't even believe in our way of life. You know, I get that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Okay. How come I scrimped and saved and got myself a year's worth of food or 2 years' worth of food or whatever I did, and I worked really hard at it because I felt that it was important, and then these people didn't. You can watch them on Facebook, and they buy jewelry, they go on trips, they have all these different things that they do. They chose not to prep. Even though they've woken to the fact that they should be prepping, they haven't, and there's always an excuse.
Well,
okay,
then
you know,
I guess they got to get off their butts and do something, won't they?
But in my world...
You know, I have old friends of mine who say, oh, yeah, if something happens, I'm going to come to your house, ha-ha. My thing is fine.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're going to pay for your bed every day. You're going to be paying for your food every day. I am going to be sending you on the shit details. I'm going to be sending you on things you're not going to like until you actually start producing. If I'm feeding you, because I prep for my family, I have not prepped for yours. But if you show up my doorstep because all of a sudden now you're in survival mode, you're going to be the one that I'm out for. You know, digging a latrine trench or cleaning out the slop shit. You know, the things that I'm going to make them work for it, and I'm going to find a way to compensate. Now, in your case, you just said something about 10 people suddenly coming in on a prep for two. That is huge. You are correct. I would probably send them on their way, and I'd be able to see you. But then again, it depends on what the situation is. With the way I've prepped and the way that I have it set up, once more, I'm looking at them as 10 little darling thieves. They can break into windows quicker than an adult can, scrounge to the house and get back out before any roving patrol can see them. I mean, these little darlings, they're...
Well, they aren't little darlings. They're all big, hurking monsters that would eat like pigs. And
they best make sure they can produce.
Well, then you've got individuals that can go out and
kill. What was that?
Well, I'm just saying in general, because if you got them as one family and I got 4 more families coming and they all expect that I'm going to support them because they didn't prep, there's an issue.
Oh, no. No, you're right there.
Well,
and guys, Julia's bringing up a valid point, and I kind of want to go ahead and reiterate what she just said because it is important, and I think Mike's going to agree. Us preppers, those of us who have planned, prepared, done what we needed to do to go ahead and take care of our family, we know that we've got 6, 7, 8 families around us that if something happens, they're going to be knocking on our door saying, yeah, we thought you were crazy, but now we know you're not, and we need. you're going to have to make some hard decisions. These are people you've seen on a regular basis. I'm not talking to strangers that it'll be easy to go ahead and say goodbye to. I'm talking to next-door neighbor that your kids play with.
Well, and I understand that. I've prepped for people who need help, and I think I've mentioned this before. I got a Ziploc gallon baggie, and it's got a knife, it's got matches, it's got fishing line, it's got a Boy Scout handbook, it's got sunscreen, it's got aspirin, it's got first aid kit, it's got all the basic things they need to survive if they learn fast and read. All that they need to do to go out and get started until they can figure it out. I mean, you can boil water up here and get rid of most of the stuff that's going to make you ill, as long as you're not drinking, obviously, from a sewage plant or something like that. So it's a hand up, not a oh, here's some food, here's some stuff, come back and when you run out and I'll give you some more, you know. And then they think, oh, she's got this, she's got that. She'll give me more, and if she doesn't, then we're going to be mad and take it. So that was my theory on that one to offset that problem. But when I think of a group, everybody brings something, at least enough to get them through the first week or two till everybody can start. You know, then you're 2 weeks ahead, and you're not playing catch-up. You're staying ahead of the game. But this group that I'm considering doesn't have any of that. They're just going to show up, and then they've got enough food, they said, so they'll just figure it out. But I don't see the point of one person providing all the handguns and bullets to everybody else because they didn't have the foresight to get their own. And to me, that's a major deficiency in the thought process of a group for long-term survival in the first place.
What they've done is they just built in an enabling situation because what they're doing is they're living in Disneyland saying nothing's going to happen, but if it does, hey, changes, you're awesome, you'll take care of us. And we all have them, we know that. My sister from another mother is the only reason, I'll be perfectly honest with you, she hears this podcast, she's going to know it. The only reason that Michelle is part of my group, well, there's two, because her son is like my son. You know, we've raised each other's kids. But the other reason is because this woman, she knows how to grind wheat flour. She knows how to, you know, she knows how to cook like old-fashioned pioneer days. She knows how to prep. She knows how to, you know, she can smoke a deer. It's like nobody's business. She's awesome with skill sets. But her family doesn't prep. They literally... It's kind of one of those things where they kind of giggle a little bit whenever they leave my house when they think about me prepping. But I know if something happens, they're showing up on my doorstep.
Right. Okay, one of the guys in the conflicted said a light form of socialism will work for short term, but after the dust settles, groups will need to remember history. The Mayflower Pact failed in a very short time and led to much death. So eventually there will be a need to be more and more free structure and not a democracy. And then he said, I hate that word. So I do understand that people are going to have to go out and be scrounging and getting things. Is it for the good of the community or is it for the good of your own personal group, family-struck group? Because, I mean, like, if you go out and shoot a deer, do you bring it home for your family or do you divide it up among all the five families in the group? So,
I think it's going to be either one. I think it's kind of going to be selfish, number one, but I think that it's also going to be for the good of the community because if you don't take care of the community, now you're out.
Right. Another guy says, bring your own required items and they will be yours. Bedroll, firearms, and other hardware is the individual's, which I agree. Food, non-specialized medical, and hand tools for construction, power production, or food production will have to be shared as much as possible. Individuals best trained for certain tasks get priority for hardware use. Also, I agree with that. If everybody brings a little bit for the group, then for use, then you've brought intent. Does that make sense?
It does, but I have a question about that. One of the things that we're avoiding when it comes, well, not avoiding, we probably haven't brought up, is what I'm trying to say. Is this a group you plan on sticking with permanently, or are you just going through?
I'm sorry?
I can't hardly hear you. I'm sorry. Okay. Let's say that my son is sick, right? And I find a group. I may group with them until he's better, but I may not want to stay. So what I contribute to that group is going to be enough for us to be taken care of for that time frame, but I'm not going to be sharing all my good stuff.
No.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense. And I understand that. This is, I was thinking more of a group that has planned on, if anything happens, we're going to get together, and this is, we're going to all go over to Bob's house, and we're going to stay there. One of the people in that group says, I think you have to be ready for them to show up empty-handed. In this economy, if you expect more to the point, you'll be flying solo. If you think folks can truly afford to double their supplies and cash them elsewhere. I don't expect people to cash anything, but I, like the other guy said, you have bedroll, firearms, food, non-specialized medical, you know, all that fits in a bug-out bag. At least it gets you a start.
What happens in one of those situations where, okay, you plan, you prep, you have everything you need, but due to circumstances, you've got to flee by the skin of your teeth, and you're sitting in your tidy whities on their doorstep.
Well, sure, but that's an exceptional circumstance. You know that they had it. You know that they had plans to do it. You're not going to have 8 families that necessarily have that happen. There's odds that somebody's going to make it, but everybody at least had the plan to do it. That's a different mindset to me.
Yeah. Hey, Julie, real quick, we had another caller that logged in, and he or she has been very patient. So, hey, caller.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello? Okay, I guess I got muted. Go ahead.
Oh, can you actually hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
It's a real bad line. This is Michelle. I'm in your group. Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just had a question about, like, bad people. You guys are all running under the assumption that everybody that's going to be in your group is good. What if somebody doesn't accept your leadership?
Well, and that's one thing we were going to bring up. I would think if you're going to have a bug-out group, that everybody kind of already knows their role.
Except for you can't guarantee that in polite society they're gonna respond the same way in the fan society. She's got a good point.
Exactly, because that's one thing. It's like people can say all they want, we're going to, you know, be one group and everything, but once they get there, it might be another, you know, story. Do you have, like, a different plan just in case?
Right. Well, and some of that's going to depend on where you're, if you're bugging out to just a spot in the wilderness or if you're going to somebody's house and using their equipment. That's brought up on that second part question that we had in the conflicted too. It's like, if they don't want to accept leadership, how would you handle that? If they're coming here to my place and they have nothing and they're eating my food and living in my spot, that's kind of a problem. You know,
but if
there's 4 of them and 1 of me, that's an issue too.
So I totally agree with that, but, you know, like, even bringing in somebody who doesn't have anything, that means they probably weren't part of the group to begin with. So it's like, do you trust this person?
I'm more concerned about the person that you've been with and that you think is your best buddy. I mean, if you've watched The Dome, which was an interesting series, the guy that everybody turned to because he was a councilman who was just wonderful ended up being the most depraved beast of them all.
I never watched that show.
Besides the Stephen King freak out stuff that goes on because of the butterfly, whatever, we're talking about a town that's literally isolated from the outside world. You cannot get out of this dome. And all those inside, they have to deal with such things as food shortages, sickness. They have to deal with, you know, where Tommy over here, we know that Tommy has a whole bunch of diesel, but Tommy doesn't like Roy. And now he's saying that if you give him diesel, then Roy's got to go. And what happens is the main guy, who happens to be the councilman, who's all upstanding and everybody loves him, he starts killing people.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But,
no, it can happen, though, very seriously. Let's say that you have people who show up at your group. And somebody else in your group thinks they're a threat. They may not kill them right in front of everybody, but you may end up not talking to them again, thinking, huh, they moved on, and then find their body 3 weeks later out of the woods.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I was talking about, too. It's like somebody may come in, but in a situation of survival and their family needing things and stuff like that, you may be the one that ends up somewhere else because laws don't apply when stuff like that happens. And there's going to be people that are going to start figuring that out, that the cops aren't going to come. There's no ambulance going to save you, you know. So maybe they may get into your house or your property and say, wait a minute, this isn't your house. This isn't your property. This now belongs to whoever. You know,
and
so
that preppers is one of our biggest scary things. I mean, for me specifically, I have my son and myself. My other son is far away. And you can't protect with two people. You can't. You know, you got to sleep, and that's a big issue, and that's why we talk about bug out groups or communal living, because there's going to have to be enough people to protect you, but hopefully within your groups there's enough of you to kind of keep an eye out for each other. You've got to have some situational awareness of what's going on.
And that's why I would have a problem with strangers. Like you say, somebody just that wasn't in your group that just shows up to your house, I would have a big issue with that, and there would definitely be, you know, a lot of watching going on with a situation like that, because for somebody not to have prepared, that means that they're probably in a desperation mode at this point.
Or they're reeling.
And that was what actually started me and conflicted in the very, very, very beginning, because I've morphed a lot over the last 4 years. Learning from, you know, when I first started, I was like, oh, we need to help everybody. We need to retain our humanity. We need to do whatever. And then I started thinking, okay, so here I am with my kid, and this skinny woman comes up the driveway with her little boy and sends him up to the house to beg, and he wants food, so I'd be in the front door giving him food and saying, oh, come in, and then her husband and the other five guys are breaking in through my back door to kill us all and take our stuff. I never would have thought about that. My son was the one who actually thought about that when we had a guy try to steal our livestock during one blizzard, and that's what started me on this whole thought process. Now, I do think we still need to share and help people, because if we don't, why are we prepping? We lose our humanity. What do we have?
But I don't think
it depends on how you look at it. Try to survive. So.
Right.
The end game to prepping and survival is to thrive.
Well,
right. But what good is thriving by yourself?
That's what it is.
I hate to say that,
but you know, I'm not
playing devil's advocate here.
I do think
as preppers we need to help people. But
eventually, yes, but not in the beginning when it's your survival and your family's survival at stake.
Yeah, it comes down to like the whole airplane thing. It's like, you know, you're going to reach for your mask first before you start helping other people, and that's pretty much how I think of it. You're going to have to get yourself set first before you can start helping other people. If you start helping other people right off the bat, you're going to go down. I mean,
right.
Right. That's a very good analogy.
My wife is the only one I will help first. Then.
The reason I prep is not for my survival. The reason I prep is because I have three children that need to survive. And I will do anything, and I have absolutely no problem saying this. I know for a fact, and I have people who back me up on this. I will do anything to protect my children. There's an elderly gentleman in Seattle who will probably never use another public bathroom again.
Oh, yeah. My wife can tell you.
Yeah. My daughter ended up
say anything I place to her, and I'll go off on you. I'll take you down. And, you know,
absolutely.
I'm 24 years old and about 80 pounds overweight. But believe me, I'll belly bop you across the damn parking lot.
Even a mouse will fight when it's cornered. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, my Aslan, my youngest, went missing at the science symposium here in Seattle, Washington. And I panicked, of course, as every parent does. And we broke off on grids and we started looking for her. And as we're going around one of the, they have a spiral walkway so you can see outside. And as we're going around one of the corners, I see into a bathroom because the door's open. And what you see is you see these shoes and what looked like a smaller pair of shoes in front of them. So, of course, mom's mind goes into daughter mode, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But because of who I am, I kicked the door in and knocked this poor guy half out of his mind when he hit the back wall. And it turned out what had happened is he'd been taking some toilet paper because he was older. And he'd been taking some toilet paper and he'd been putting it on the seat. And the two loops just looked like her shoes. So, of course, I apologized personally and ran out of there. But I mean,
actually, my wife.
Hilarious.
Like, you know, if I'm willing to do something like that because I'm scared that, you know, my daughter may be in trouble, imagine what's going to happen if we have even somebody I know, you know, let's say it's part of my group, and I think that they're a threat to my children. I'm going to have no problem sending the herd. I'm going to have no problem saying, and I'm not going to say you got to go, because what I posted in the chat room, I don't know if you can see it or not, but what I posted in the chat room, you turn them away, they still know where you live, and now you have a threat.
Right.
Yeah, you don't turn them away. Eliminate the threat. Hello?
Right. Yeah, okay. No, I'm listening.
Eliminate the threat.
Absolutely. And like I say, I've changed a lot. Now I think that I would meet people at the door with a gun instead of, you know, oh, hi, what's going on? And my son would know to watch the back door in case, you know, because we've brought these things up. And I hate the idea of becoming suspicious. But that's what you got
to
do to survive. And I mean, now... Even now, it's with the liberals versus the conservatives.
Lord, yeah.
No, I have a business.
Oh, really?
Hey,
seriously, you know, never underestimate your enemy, but really?
I have a business that runs in my home.
Hey, come on.
And
man.
I have clients that want
to come to
my home.
I'm laughing here.
All right. Well, one of the guys from Conflicted said, you know, having people bring stuff is one-sided and very controlled. Truth is, I was bugging out, all my preps would fit in my camper, but a minimum of a 4-hour loadout, or I could get all my tent camping gear in 1 to 2 hours, or my family's bug-out bags in 15 minutes. If I can't make it home, then I have my get-home pack in the truck. Either you're invited or you aren't. It's cut and dry. But the bottom line is, if I have to show up with a certain amount of stuff or the door is closed, then I would not want to invest much effort into the bug-out location at all. I understand pitching in and pre-shift. There's many laborious things that can be done to a bug-out location that wouldn't cost much. But the bottom line is, your homestead, if you're a true prepper, should be accommodating to your needs. So if you think you may want loyal members in your group, let them pitch in and help them build up the farm to a living standard. If not, then be honest early on.
Yeah, I remember that
so,
one.
So in other words,
that was a good comment.
Well, he's saying don't bring anything but help build up the bug out location. And that's another aspect.
Okay,
that,
but if he's bringing, how is he building it up? Is he out there planting? Is he out there putting up posts?
Yeah.
Is he out there doing fencing? Is he building up the housing? I mean, what is he exactly contributing at this point? When you say build up,
yeah, that kind of sounds weird to me, too. It's like, what exactly is this person going to be doing while you're feeding them?
Right. Well, and he said, okay, so if anyone claimed, let's see, there's many things to being a homesteader that does that requires help. If a bug-out location, if you pitch in free labor and just overbuild a smidge, then the accommodation processes have begun. Example, a one-acre garden is all you have time for, but you plant two. The family from town helps as much as possible. Then you sell some veggies in town at the friend's house, take the cash, and add a rabbit cage with the free labor. It's teamwork. That's a different side of this, and that makes sense. If they're still contributing to that, to build an area, then that makes sense because you're pitching in your labor. You're doing sweat equity. That's acceptable to me.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I have set up, Julie. I mean, I have you. I have people close. I have people far away. I've got a homestead in I've got people in Ireland. I have people in Africa. I've got people in Brazil who are saying, hey, if something happens, you can make it here. You're home. Okay? So, but it's coordinating.
Wow.
So... Oh, we got another caller, guys. Julie,
wow.
You're
awesome
tonight.
Yeah, I'm actually off tonight. This is the first time I've ever been able to listen live, you know.
Yeah, this is Chuck. What's Bravo Osco Lima?
Hey, Chuck.
Hi, Chuck.
Bravo Osco Lima. That's a bug out location, which is a bug out place you go to when shit hits the fan.
Okay, got it. We're clear. I wanted to call in just to ask that.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
I'm glad
okay,
we
my job
help,
here
Chuck.
Is done. Bye. No, just joking. Hi, everyone.
Well, we have had two sides of this now. We had people coming in and just taking whatever was one person had started. We have a basic bug out location, somebody's house who's put up all the preps. And you have five families that come in and just will rely on skills. They don't bring anything with them. They just come and kind of suck off the original guy for until everybody can start pitching and getting on their feet.
Julie, you have changed, honey.
I have. 4 years ago, I wouldn't have said it that way.
4 years ago, Julie would have been, you have these individuals who needed your help, and they came in, and they were able to contribute. Now she's like, yeah, these guys are sucking off.
Nah, I have to, yeah, I don't agree with that. I think that they have to contribute somehow. Bring something, damn it. Don't, that's no different from leeching off the public dole for Pete's sake. I mean... Come on, man. Show something. Show that you got a freaking brain, let alone a basic grasp of, you know, accountability and responsibility
right.
And stuff like that.
And that's what I say, Chuck. Good for you. Well, I'm reading these responses off our conflicted page, and some of them are like, okay, well, you could go in and find the bug out location, and then everybody could go pitch in and build it up to a bug out location and utilize things if you needed it, and then still share in the wealth. Like if you guys all did veggies, you could all
more
them.
Like a commune instead of a bug out. They're like,
but they would live at their
like
own home until but they'd still live at their own home until shit hits the fan, and then they had to go somewhere. Because
yeah, you know what the
problem
with that is, though, right?
If shit never hits the fan, you're fixing somebody else's house up.
Yeah.
Well, no, but
yeah.
It's like Fort Apache in the Bronx there. You got one little fort and it's surrounded by a whole bunch of freaking people. I mean, that's
it's better to have like a plan. First off, putting all your ammo in one area and one place, also a bad idea. You're gonna have to have contingency plans there. But to put everything into one place, and not be able to hold it, that's like the ultimate disaster that can possibly happen.
Oh, I got one worse, Chuck. I got one worse. Julie, what if your home had been the bug out location?
Well, it was supposed to be for a while, but nobody was doing anything. They all kind of just would meet for lunch and talk, and that was it.
Okay, but
I thought about
that. Something. With this recent disaster, it's wiped.
Taking into consideration the makeup of my community, not to mention the geographical layout, it's not even defendable by any stretch of the imagination. This place is horrible for a bug-in situation, in my own opinion. So,
mine is pretty good. My existing house probably isn't the best situation right now, but the area is still really good. The issue we have is the winter, so you'd have to prepare knowing that if something happened in the winter, you have a place to go. Or
you're
prepared
how these things
for
go.
It.
You got to take it case by case. So,
right.
That's just my opinion.
No,
keep it fluid. You know, have different escape routes, have different potentials, help out where you can, but keep it fluid because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, all our bug out right now, Julie, between you and I, because we're in Washington State, we're planning, we're prepping, it's great. But if Mount Rainier goes, you know, we're screwed.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
You wouldn't be able to breathe the air. You would have to go.
Well, I was in high school when Mount St. Helens went up, and I was over in Ellensburg, and we had at least a foot of ash, and I was a runner back then, and we were running for nationals, and we had to bus out to, I don't remember where, somewhere over Seattle. Did you guys get ash? I think it came our way. I don't think it went that far, but maybe it did. We had to bus to a
down in California.
Right, but we had spots where it missed it because of the wind patterns and things. So they had to bus us to different towns so we could run because of the ash. And you couldn't drive your car. You couldn't have you had to wear masks. All these things for that. And I remember that. It's not a good situation. Obviously.
Mount Rainier may be dangerous, but at the same time, there might be advantages to it. So I'm reminded of a quote from a movie, and don't laugh, Lord of the Rings.
yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah, one of the hobbits was talking to the Ents, and he came up with the saying, closer to danger, farther from harm. So the way I translated that is, okay, Mount Rainier is dangerous. Yeah, will it spew ashes? Probably. And all that stuff. But at the same time, no one's going to expect you to get to be there or go closer to Mount Rainier because everyone's going to be trying to run away.
Reason I use Mount Rainier instead of Mount St. Helens is Mount Rainier actually is directly tied to the San Andreas Fault. There are many scientists who speculate if Mount Rainier finally does blow, it will actually set off the reaction for the fire rim. The fire rim is all the way down the coast of the Americas, to Japan, all the way up. If Mount Rainier actually goes, it is not going to be like Mount St. Helens. It is going to be an extinction level event. It's going to be
Let me ask you this. Without giving me your exact specific location, how far are you in proximity to Mount Rainier?
It's in my backyard.
I can see Mount Rainier from my backyard.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So.
If it does go off, as everyone is expecting it to, similar to Mount St. Helens, you're thinking about like a tactical nuclear bomb, like a couple megatons at least, right?
We'd be out of the range.
Imagine this. Okay, Chuck, imagine this. If Mount Rainier goes, you know that imaginary crack that goes all the way from Alaska all the way down to Mexico? It's going to erupt the entire thing. It's going to be a Mi'kmaq all the way down.
Right.
And what will also
and I'm
happen?
On the, I'm on the surviving side of that line. Donna's not.
You are. I know.
Yeah,
but I'd be waterfront property probably. Huh?
Mount Rainier.
Allow me. Oh, volcano skill is not going to do much damage to the U.S.
But Mount Rainier is directly called
Yellowstone
goes.
We're screwed.
Right. No, no, no. Mount Rainier is directly tied to the San Andreas Fault, where Mount St. Helens was not.
Allow me to expand on that. Mount Rainier is scary. People are not going to be wanting to be around Mount Rainier if it's even showing signs of erupting.
But
so
it is now.
Many of whom are, okay, and many of whom are trying to find ways to get away from it. The smart person would take advantage of that, knowing that everyone's going away from that, and that'll be part of their security. Just stocked up on a whole bunch of gas masks and air filtration, carbon filters, so on and so forth, and also have a shitload of it to help you exist. At least semi-near Mount Rainier on a daily basis, I suppose. That's what I was thinking.
Yes, what about government forced evacuations, though? Because there's a lot of places where things like this happen. The government came in and said, I don't care what you say, you're leaving.
Yeah. What you're also dealing with here is
Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens, those are minor. Because if they go, it's going to kill off good bit of people, but they're minor. It's not going to affect the U.S. overall.
Except for Mike.
Yellowstone.
Except for Don.
Yellowstone goes.
You don't understand, Mike. I understand Yellowstone
can
is
you
a huge
say,
future,
put your head in your leg, kiss your butt goodbye?
Well, and one thing with Mount Rainier, depending on what side it blows, you know, it could do less damage than another side, depending on the pressure buildup and everything else.
Oh, I know. I was around when Mount St. Helens went. I was in Germany when that went. And we watched it.
Yeah,
I
showed it.
Mount Rainier,
but if the ash cloud gets high
way.
Enough, too, it can start messing up your weather systems and everything with the ash going into the
jet
stream.
Oh, and we lost our
like
car.
That.
I drove a 59 Ford pickup, and it did not like that ash. In fact, they told us we couldn't drive.
Here's the problem. If Mount Rainier blows the way that many scientists have been studying it and looking underneath it and looking at its caldera that's underneath it, it is going to have the same effect globally that Krakatoa did, which actually brought in a little ice age.
Right. Exactly. They were saying even Mount St. Helens that when Mount St. Helens went up, that it affects the weather all over the world just
it
because
did.
Of it in the atmosphere.
Right, it did.
Yeah, like
it
just there
went
behind it.
Around the country.
It won't have the same effect.
Mount Rainier is. That's the difference. Mount Rainier, it's kind of like...
I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's going to trigger the pressure plate release on the Ring of Fire, and that's going to stimulate five other volcanoes, among other earthquakes. Then you have tsunamis. You've got...
Correct.
This whole geographical anomaly that's all tied together. And that was catastrophic.
Imagine Yellowstone underneath four different volcanoes.
Yellowstone.
Go ahead.
A problem.
Yellowstone would be a problem too, but it wouldn't, depending on which way the wind blew, they'd think it would go east, not west.
Yes.
So we
they'd
wouldn't be affected
east,
until it went all the way around the.
Mm-hmm.
The worst case scenario occurs, and this applies to both Yellowstone as well as for Mount Rainier, is when pressure builds up to the point that all that pressure is going to be focused on a fish, like one point or opening, and that would be the worst case scenario because the force of explosion or whatever is pretty much proportional to the amount of pressure that's exerted on the caldera before it erupts. Now, why, and that's the worst case scenario, okay? We're talking about full scale, whatever that Lori's been saying, it's that's the worst case scenario. But what if there's another something else along that line that release that, that can ease that pressure off or release that pressure.
Right. And
we don't know that.
Yeah,
good point.
And that's the key.
Right.
Isn't that
but,
what
but
prepping
there's
is about?
There's
is
so many
preparing for the worst.
Right.
Exactly. Thank you, Michelle. And that's it. I mean, we can only prep for so much. But, I mean, I can prep here, and then the whole mountain caves in and buries me under 40 tons of rock, and I never got to use it. You know, well, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, but
it,
or I can prep.
You have to give away $5,000 of the food. You can't do anything about it.
I already gave it away, yeah. Well, and or I could prep and be killed by my roof caving in and somebody else is going to find my stuff and it's going to help somebody else. At that point, I don't care, you know, or my kids, I care, you know. That's the biggest stuff.
Yeah.
Like Don says, I prep for my kids. But
yeah. I prep for my wife.
At the moment, I prep for my cat. My kids prep for themselves. But
my cat, well,
my cat has his own 32 day bug out bag full of cat food and some cat litter on the side.
There you go.
Is that with my family? What I've had to do is I've had to tell my son that yes. If a zombie apocalypse breaks out, I will allow you to go ahead and shoot the neighbors. No, you cannot shoot the neighbors until I tell you they're a zombie.
My wife's so
excited. Let's shoot them before
they
turn into zombies. Okay, right, I see where that's going.
During a zombie apocalypse.
It's a proactive safety measure, right?
I try to keep the human gloom out of the prepping for the kids. And the reason being is I want them to go ahead and enjoy it. And I want them to be prepared. But I don't want them living in terror for the rest of their lives. They don't need to have any, you know, depression-era mentality. So, like, when my daughter started speculating which of the kids we should sacrifice if we have to run from the house, we do a lot of thing.
Back to the lottery.
Yeah. But, you know, happen. I know my kids can take care of themselves, but at the same time, I don't want them waking up every day with that mentality today, maybe today. I mean, it's just.
You want to be the first one to be eaten? That can be arranged.
Yes, exactly.
Jeez.
Oh, that's a way to encourage and motivate.
Well, that goes back to the bug out location then. If yes. That's the case, you've got actually kind of meat on the hoof. You know, pick out the one who's not doing their share and start with them.
You
picked in an example for the others.
That's a great motivator, yeah. Oh, you didn't get your acre of fence put in this week, did you, Bob?
My husband comes home now and he goes to the house. And he looks to see what chores are done, and he's like, so I guess you're the one that gets sacrificed this week, huh?
Yeah. All right, so new question then. We have about 15 minutes.
Kill. There's the answer.
So you have your bug out group, you have your location, and like Michelle said, people all of a sudden don't want to respect your leadership or they don't like your rules. How do you combat that?
Make an example of one and tell the rest that they need to fall in line.
That's,
if they don't,
that's kind of what I was thinking, too. It's kind of like
a
schoolyard story thing.
When I lived
in Los Angeles, I would just have to find the biggest person and go kick their ass, and then everybody else wouldn't mess with me. It's sad to say it like that.
Well, that's what they do in jail. You go punch the biggest person in the jail and might get your butt kicked.
Works.
The rest of them will leave you alone.
I mean, yeah, because that's seriously, I mean, you know, I was a white girl living in East L.A. in the 80s, so, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how life had to be at that time, so, I mean,
right.
In a situation
LA.
Like that, it might have to be.
God,
and I put in I put that actually, Sigmar put that question in Conflicted Gate. And I'm thinking to combat that, if you take, say you have five families and you take one person out of each family, say for a month's duty or 2 months' duty or a quarter, they have to work for a quarter, and they're like a council. Problems get brought to them, and they make decisions in a group. And then at the end of the quarter, you switch the council people, you know, a different person in the family or different people, and it's just drawn randomly. Then you have group participation. Everybody has a voice in it, but it's not one or two people.
Open up the communication line so that way everybody kind of can get out what they need to before it festers into something horrible. Yeah.
Right.
The one thing you don't want fear to be your motivator. And the reason you don't want fear to be your motivator, that leads to anarchy or mutiny.
Absolutely. And you're already under so much stress when you're in that kind of situation already. I mean, I learned that from our house caving in this winter. Your brain does not work like you think it's going to be, and you don't handle issues like you think you're going to, because you're so overwhelmed with sensory input and worry and fear and all that other stuff. It's hard to just, things that are considered normal are overwhelming. And so you get put into that kind of situation and you have guns on top of it, you're going to there's going to be some bigger issues. So things have
absolutely.
So
that,
there's got to be some
rules. And proof of that, you know.
Right. So.
Yeah, I would think
know.
That when you're dealing with a situation where you start seeing discontent in your group, you need to go ahead and identify where that discontent is coming from, first off. Once you identify where it's coming from, you need to figure out how to deal with it directly. There could be many reasons. Maybe you've got an individual. Prime example, let's go back to the fact that we got a landowner who now has a whole group of people, and now you're living in close quarters, and suddenly you realize that John snores, Angela farts, and Cecil chews very loudly. I mean, you've got these little things that will pick at you. And so discontent starts setting in. Those are things that you can address by motivating and spreading people out more for privacy. But if it comes to a situation where your leadership is being questioned, at that point, you need to find out why, and you need to either counteract it, or you need to explain it, or you need to redirect. You can't just say, pick out the biggest bully and beat him up. Maybe they're scared. Maybe they don't see you as a leader because, okay, for instance, with me, listen to my voice. This is not a radio voice. I had a individual today who told me that when I'm online, I sound like a 80-year-old woman who is on helium talking very quickly. I do.
I would like to send that person a Survival Wolf sticker. Please give your info to my
brother. But at the same time, you know, you see me in real life, and I've had many people tell me one of three things. One, they either just automatically want to hear what I have to say and they want to follow me. Two, they're intimidated and they'll get out by me and they don't want anything to do with me. Or three, they think that I can do awesome things, but they're kind of confused as to why I think the way I do. These are the three primary things I've heard. So if I'm in a leadership position in my bug out, and all of a sudden I start hearing discontent over here with what I'm doing, I'm going to start looking at myself to find out how I'm communicating, number one. Number two, I'm going to start looking at what we have done with those individuals. Maybe they've been forgotten. Maybe they brought up something more than once, and we just kind of did not hear it. Or number three, maybe we have somebody who's deliberately in there causing problems, and we need to nip that in the bud because they're deliberately in there trying to break up the group so they can go ahead.
Exactly. Exactly what I was about to say. And has anybody seen 10 Cloverfield Lane? I don't know if you've seen that movie or not. But John Goodman plays a ripper, and he has, like, this underground bunker and all these things, and he thinks that somebody questioned his authority, and he actually shot the guy and threw him in an acid barrel. Good meat.
I
would have just fed him to pigs.
They thought something outside was going to kill him, so they were all like stuck in this bunker.
One of the things I noticed in my group One of the things I brought into my groups that a lot of people don't think about is I've actually brought a politician in. And the reason I have is because if you have a true politician who actually is not corrupt, which I know is rare to find, but these individuals know how to talk to everybody so everybody feels validated, vindicated. I have brought in a communicator who has a political mindset, because what happens is if I come out and I say, this is what's going to happen, and I'm doing it with a military mindset, the civilians in my group who aren't used to being told, you screw up, fix it, they're used to being coddled a little bit, or the military individuals who are used to, you screwed up, fix it, and I'm kind of coddling at that point, I've got an individual who knows how to communicate. That's all he has to do. He doesn't have
That's
to do
That's a good idea.
Person.
Yep. That's a good idea. Just kind of get in the BS in there that can talk to everybody. That is a good idea.
That's actually a double-edged sword.
Right.
You're going to have a doctor who's selling your drugs that you have for your group because he wants to go ahead and get extra food. You're going to have the guy who's plowing the field, and he doesn't want to work anymore, so he starts quietly without anybody noticing, putting the kids to slave labor. You're going to have the evil no matter what happens. But at the same time, I'd rather have somebody who can communicate what I need, and I can go ahead and keep an eye on him, versus my going out there, pissing off half the group, and now we have chaos and confusion.
Yeah, what if your BSer is the one planting the seeds, though, too? That would be a good question.
Well, and when you're with a group of people for any length of time, I'll use my kitchen as an example at work. You know, once you get to know the people, say after a month or so, you know who's got something on their mind. You know who's not telling you the truth. Body language says a lot. You know who starts pairing up with who. And you know when there's trouble fomenting, and they don't have to say a word to you. You just know by how they're acting or how they're doing their jobs and things. And then, you know, but as preppers, we got to pay attention to that, too, because that's going to be an even bigger issue, you know, to catch it before it gets to that point.
Yeah, because intuition has to be part of it, too, definitely. Because, like, I'm in nursing. And a lot of times, you know, we get a lot of new patients, and it's like I have to pretty much go in a room and decide within the first 45 seconds what kind of person this is, how I'm going to
Right, or you can go in there and tell, oh, there's something wrong with them. You can't put your finger on it, but you can tell by looking at them there's
exactly,
something going
like
on.
Personalities, because there's some of them I can go in there, and I have to be prim and proper with them, and yes, Mrs. So-and-so, and then there's other ones that want to be called by their first names, and you know, you can walk in their room and you say, hey, Grandma, how they hanging? And, you know, and they're laughing and they're good with it. But other ones, you know, you have to learn who you can be that with, you know, within, like, 45 seconds, you need to know these things. So.
Right.
Now, I have a question for everybody. With all your groups, have you done background checks for your people?
Well,
But, no, I didn't do it with mine.
I did, and I already have two people eliminated because I found out that one of them happens to be a level 2 sex offender with children, and another one who happens to have a larceny charge against him.
Oh, wow.
The larceny charge
happens to be
a pastor. Larceny. Theft. And somebody got hurt. That individual happens to be a pastor.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, is
crazy.
That something that happened when he was, like, 18 or, you know?
No, but at the same time, you know, if it's something that happened when they were youth, I'm not going to hold it against them unless it happens to be, you know, something that looks like a pattern. What I'm saying is that you don't know, and I'm going to bring it up because Michelle did, I'm going to reiterate this. You do not know who you're going to bed with when it comes to prepping until it actually happens. And that's when the true beast is going to come out.
Yep. No, I agree with that.
Somebody with a criminal record could be your best friend. somebody that doesn't have one, your worst nightmare.
I don't care how good they are. I don't care if they happen to be the best damn mechanic out there who can go ahead and take nothing and make it into a home. They're not coming into my group. I've got three children.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah, on that part, I agree. I mean, you know, there is a line.
What about a drug addict?
What about what?
That is pretty iffy.
You've got somebody you find out is a drug addict. What if you find out the individual happens to have a background in anarchy? What do you find out that the individual that you just brought into your, that you've known for 20 years is a great guy, killed two people? I mean, these are things that you, if you're really serious about prepping and you should have that open honesty, then you should be able to do background checks on each other and find out who's what and where. That's where you're going to find out the banker that asked you if he could be part of your group, and you were thinking, oh, you just bake. You find out he was Special Forces. I mean, you should know the history of your people.
Hold on there. I do agree that we should have background checks, and we should know our people, and so we can have trust. At the same time, trust is not 100% based on history, but based on the actions and the examples of the individual, especially when the chips are down. So, you know, everyone's flawed. Everyone may have questionable blips on their history, and some of them might even go so far as to having a record. But it, and this is taking a chance. I know it. So Lori may not agree with me, but I think they deserve a chance. If they prove to be more problematic and a liability to the entire group, let them go.
For me, it would depend on when. Like, you know, if they're like, you know, 50 some odd years old and they had charges against them when they were 18, you know, for, you know, taking a car for a joyride or something. I mean, that's one thing. But if, like, they just committed a crime 2 months ago, you know, that would be another thing.
Well, adding to that, though, it depends on the situation. Or let me explain why. I have an individual in my group, and once more, I don't share names, but I have an individual in my group who's got a record that literally is almost 3 feet thick because of his childhood. Not his childhood, because that's close. But because this guy is a booster, he's a carjacker, he's a thief. I mean, he's a con man.
Well, I was just going to say that.
Really,
all
have
that, though, would be beneficial.
Somebody
in my life,
that might come in handy, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all beneficial if shit hits the fan. As long as the person is somebody that, you know, there's reasons why people do things. I do believe that. I mean, if my kids were starving and I was either going to be a hooker on the street corner or steal, I'm going to try stealing first.
Well,
just
see, that's
because,
not
yeah,
well,
I'm 54 years old.
About it.
But I'm saying, and then if I got caught, then I have a record. But at least, you know, there's you got to find out a lot about it. But those are beneficial skills to have with carjacking and theft and the other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
now, I'm gonna throw a scenario at you, okay?
Wait, we gotta be quick.
You ready for it?
I got 7 minutes before the show's over.
It'll be done real quick. This person caught a felony charge for cussing a former employer out on the phone. Okay. Do you exclude him?
No. The reason that I have brought in this guy I just commented to you about is because the reason he has done it his entire life has always been for his two children. He has a nasty divorce. The wife ended up with the kids, threw him under the bus, had a raw deal, and he has literally turned to the dark side to go ahead and do everything he can to keep his kids. He did a plea bargain with the federal judges, and now he actually works with the courts to go ahead and help catch others. I want this guy on my team because if there's a lock out there, he can pick it. If there's danger, he can go ahead and out talk it. So,
Now, not everybody that's got a record is evil. I mean, a lot of people out there that just, put it bluntly, fucked up.
Right.
Made a mistake.
You got a sexual record,
and that's
you're not coming in.
No?
Yeah, you got a sexual record.
And a lot of people, a lot of people
can't get over if you're like a sexual deviant, you're gone. I mean, to me, I don't care if you did that when you were when you were 18 or you did it at 50, you're not in my group.
Yeah, but you're not just on my group. Hit the fan. I'm gonna make sure you don't.
I agree with that. What the hell is my phone ringing for?
Like I said, seriously.
Yeah, because
the sexual deviant is not gonna change.
Okay. Well, we're about as wild at the end as we were at the beginning.
But,
I'm glad I had tonight off. This is the first time I've been able to listen to you live.
What?
I appreciate
it. Real quick, guys. Contra Radio Network, go to the website on Facebook. Go ahead and buy some shirts. Go ahead and show that you have support. Ladies of the Watch is part of it. So is Contra John Network Radio. And we hope to see you next week. Did I miss anything, Julie?
Absolutely.
Barbecue
and we'd like to thank John and Michelle and Chuck and Mike Ronan from Survival Wolves. You guys were awesome. That makes it such a better show when we actually have live people talking rather than just me and Don, or me and Don.
I was going to say live people. Who do you think?
Live people, yes, versus the dead ones. They don't say a whole lot.
All right. Don't forget, Friday,
like you set up blow-up dolls or something.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys.
Yep.
You guys didn't hear that conversation, did you?
I'm not sure.
A little bit of it.
I was listening to Grandma over there in the background. All right. Well, you guys have a very good evening, and that's another Ladies of the Watch this week, and we look forward to maybe seeing you on the webpage or hearing from you on Contra Radio Network. Thank you, guys.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you guys
later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It might be cold outside, but Blimpy is keeping it warm, toasty, and tasty. Visit your neighborhood Blimpy to enjoy a grilled panini sub that'll warm you from the inside. Try the classic Sicilian with slow-cured ham, prosciutini, pepperoni, and melted provolone on toasty ciabatta bread. Or order the turkey bacon cheddar grilled to toasty perfection on Blimpy's delicious pretzel bread. Keep the chill at bay with a warm, toasty panini sub at Blimpy today. Get $1 off at blimpy.com/coupon.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.